Hello and welcome to the second Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light podcast. I'm Keir, the community manager here at Crystal Dynamics. And this podcast is going to be about audio. So with me I have Alex Wilmer and Carl Gallagher, the audio guys. Say hello, chaps.
Hello.
Hi.
And again, I asked for a ton of questions from the forums, and I've got loads here. So we'll do our best to answer as many as we can whilst Carl slurps his water. And so some guys also sent in their questions in MP3 or WAV, and Alex has kindly put them through the Zolot machine, and so they sound like the baddie from Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light. So let's crack on with the first question, which comes from Zebra from TombRaiderForums.com, who asks,
how did you become a video game sound effect creator, and what initially got you interested in this kind of work?
How did I become a video game sound effect creator? I started off... when I was in school, I had I was pretty interested in sound, particularly music. I think it's very difficult to get interested in sound in particular. It's very difficult to say, I would really want to make the sound of, you know, that explosion for that movie. It's much easier to get into music, and so I was in a band for a long time, and I was played drums, and I was the only person who knew anything about computers, so I ended up doing all the recordings and learning about sound that way. And then when I went to university, I did a master's in multimedia systems, and before that I did computer science. But when I did my master's in multimedia, I had someone teach me about sound, and he was very, very good, and it kind of got me interested in it as a career. I wasn't really sure exactly how I could make a career out of it, but I knew that film needed sound, but I didn't really understand what the process was for film. So I kind of came to California and tried to find work here. Actually, I went to New York first, and I did some production sound, so actually working on the set, holding a boom mic was my first thing. And then I came to California... as I discovered about audio post-production. Audio post-production is somewhat of a black art. I think sound in general is somewhat of a black art. It's something that people just don't think about, because the whole point of sound is that it's invisible and that you never really notice it. If we've done our job well, you'll never notice sound. But there's an incredible amount of work involved. I guess I kind of learned what that was when I came to California and started working with a company called Berkeley Sound Artists. And so I worked there for just about 4 years, and then started working here. Actually, before all that, I was working in between my New York stint and my working for Berkeley Sound Artists. I worked as a Foley assistant in Ardmore Studios, which is a film company in Ireland, and I got some really great experience working in Foley there. I think Foley is something that a lot of films just either don't have the budget for or don't, you know, really do very well, and I got some really excellent experience doing that.
Okay, and how about you, Carl? I know you've been here for quite a while now.
Yeah, so let's see. So my experience in games started at about, I think, the beginning of 2004. I started working at EA doing testing for Sims 2 with Maxis, and had an awesome time. Management was great. And then after about 6 months or so, Sims 2 was released, and I was set onto an EA project being managed by EA managers, and it was quite a different experience. And right around that time, Crystal Dynamics was finishing up, or was, I think it was around Alpha, for Project Snowblind. Mm-hmm. And my roommate, Mike Peasley, was the sound designer there. And they were stuck and needed to have someone do some fairly menial stuff for the multiplayer levels of Project Snowblind, like doing some ambient sound work and also sound occlusion work.
Okay.
And he knew that I liked to learn stuff and would pick up whatever it was very quickly. And so I managed to get into Crystal and did that stuff very quickly, not having any 3D experience at all, and kind of in the process realized that that was exactly what I wanted to do. Not the menial stuff, but sound stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so I ended up doing, like, I localized almost all the cinematics for Snowblind, and then doing the ambient sound work. I loved it.
Okay.
And so I started doing more and taking as much responsibility and as much work as I could at Crystal.
And so you've worked on Legend, Anniversary, and Underworld, and now Guardian of Light as well.
Right. Yeah, I started at the end of Snowblind, and then, yeah.
Okay.
And the DLC 2-packs for Underworld as well.
The next question comes from, I think it's one of two or three, but it comes from, now, it's Noodles RW, or Noodle SRW, I'm not sure, but from TombRaiderForums.com. He has also recorded his question, which is brilliant, so here it goes.
Hello, Gear, Alex and Carl. Question is, how many months have each of you been working on the sound for Guardian of Light?
So how long have you been working on the sound for Guardian of Light?
I've been working exactly 7 months and 2 weeks, I think, or a week.
Right. Have you been counting that off on your wall, or that's quite a precise measurement of time?
I remember because I was hired in January 16th or 12th or something like that. So it's something like that.
Okay. And how about you, Carl?
Oh, God. It's very hard to say because, first of all, I'm terrible with dates. And also, I kept on switching back and forth between the Guardian of Light and
another project.
Other stuff. I'd say probably it started on it about a year ago.
Okay.
At least. And going bit by bit.
It's fair to say some of the sounds in the game have been worked on for a matter of years. So
yeah.
In that sense, you could say quite a long time you've been working on Guardian of Light.
Pretty much forever.
10 years.
Noodle SRW asks another question. Take it away.
Also, what are activities of a typical day in the life of a sound guru for Guardian of Light?
Alex.
So typically, it's difficult to find a typical day. I mean, you're usually working on one specific task, but that could be anything from either dialogue, dialogue editing. You could be working on a cinematic. You could be doing a trailer. You could be doing implementing sound, any kind of sound, like doing sound design.
Mm-hmm.
So typically the day, has oatmeal in it, and then everything else around that just kind of changes.
That's pretty much mine as well.
So it's kind of, the work's varied.
Yeah, I might come into work and have some oatmeal also. Assuming I can find any. If I can't, I'll have some cereal. But beyond that, it's like kind of looking to see what area I want to focus on that day. And then...
How closely do you work with the programmers and designers?
Programmers right now, not all that particularly closely. But, we work pretty closely with the teams.
Uh-huh.
It ends up working a lot better that way, because then you end up getting an idea of what a particular item is supposed to feel like or what functions it's supposed to have. Otherwise, you're just kind of messing about and you might miss pieces.
Sure.
Talking with the designers about what's going on is kind of important. Otherwise, you might end up wasting some time.
Just Croft also asked how much time does it take to produce all the audio for Guardian of Light? I think we've established that's quite a long time.
Yeah, typically on any project, it takes pretty much a third of the time of the entire development cycle. Would you say that to, like, produce the assets?
For only producing the assets?
Yeah, for, like, sure. Creating the assets? Yeah.
That sounds about right.
So, like, about a third of the time. So if it's, like, a three-year project, it's usually, like, a year. And then to actually process it and get into the game is probably sort of the rest of your time.
Mm-hmm. And Michael DT from TombRaiderForums.com asks, how big a role does the audio in Guardian of Light play? Will you need to be listening for important things?
I think you pretty much just play this game with the visual off and just play it with sound, and I think it would probably be a better experience.
It's a bold statement.
No, it's very important, it communicates story. It communicates your interactivity with the game. And it communicates the most important thing is the emotion. So And that's kind of the main thing that you always have to think about, like whether when you're actually doing any audio for the game, is you really have to think about what is the purpose of this. What am I achieving, and what am I telling the player by doing this?
Mm-hmm.
So you always have to remind yourself that, because sometimes you can get a little bit off track as you know, it's extremely complex to do this kind of stuff, because you have to know about all the other systems of the game that kind of builds the rest of the game. You have to know about animation and physics and everything, and so
you have to look at the whole picture of the game when you're working on the sounds.
Yeah,
so it's consistent.
You can, well, yeah, and you have to stand up back from it. And when you're trying to figure out where to plug in a sound, you can get very distracted by it, just how complex that is, and sucked into that particular task. So you always have to remind yourself of what exactly is the purpose of this sound, and see it from a broader perspective.
So when do you plug the sounds into the game as well? So I've seen you playing Guardian of Light. I don't know that you're doing that just for fun, or whether it's part of your job, but do you put the sounds into the environment, and then you work out, you know, the in terms of how loud it's going to be and when you're going to start hearing it, so on and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the majority of what, well, specifically it's the majority of what I do, and Alex as well. Mm-hmm. And Alex is some sound design in addition to that, but yeah, the majority of it is plugging in different stuff, taking different assets, mixing the assets together in the game. And
because I remember there was one area, I can't remember which level it was, but I was playing through with the Lovely Forest, and there was one area where you weren't sure which music to have, and then I think it may have been you, Carl, that put in like a techno soundtrack or something, and Forest found it hilarious.
Yeah, that's still in the game.
Okay, moving on. The next question comes from Just Raiding Tomb from TombRaiderForums.com, and he's recorded his question as well, so take it away.
I cannot wait to get my hands on this game. It looks so awesome. So I was wondering what steps are involved in the process of recording a sound, and what objects and materials do you use? And also, is there anything that sticks out from the making of the game in terms of audio that was extremely difficult?
So for the gore sounds, that kind of the squishy gross, and also like some of the impact sounds, it's kind of hard to figure out exactly what to put together to make a sound that sounds like flesh being squished or smashed or broken and so on. For some of the gore stuff, I think Mike and the other guys recorded spaghetti. They found it worked very well.
Nice.
Spaghetti, some oatmeal, kind of a mixture. Just, it's kind of ended up being a heinous bowl of ruined food.
So I can see oatmeal does come in really handy in the mornings, and then also for the sounds of like breaking bones or.
Yeah. I think for the bone breaking, I think it was fairly typical, like celery kind of stuff. Although I do remember Mike in the sound booth at some point who took a raw chicken and basically tore it to pieces and broke all the bones with his hands. In the sound booth, it was kind of disturbing.
At least it wasn't alive. Was there anything in Guardian of Light that was particularly difficult?
Yeah, so there's a cinematic at the very beginning where the book opens, and I think there's sand and it's a very very specific sound, and there was a lot of sound design in that just because the letters are coming alive and
so which aspect are you talking about, the page folding or the sound?
Well, the page,
the mystical,
the page and the book turning were not so difficult, but there's this part where the sand is actually running along the top of the book, and that was really hard to get.
Could have used oatmeal.
That's a good point. I probably should have used oatmeal.
Maybe before you put water in it.
And so Carl had actually made a leather laptop case that has the Guardian of Light laser engraved into the front of it. So it basically looks like that book. So I took that into the recording booth and poured sand on it, and that is the sound of that.
That's cool, and I'm going to try and get that to give away as a prize.
Really?
Carl Stewart is the one who made that thing, not me.
Oh, right. Yes, Carl Stewart, not Carl. Yeah, people.
Oh,
And so we're just going to take a listen to the gore sound effects that Carl was talking about.
Probably the most ridiculous thing that I've done for sound recording was for anniversary. Was when the Pistols that Lara had an anniversary was 1911, Springfield Armory 1911 Pistols. And for Legend, I'd used sounds, I think, from a library for the reloading sounds and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I thought they were pretty good. And I decided I want to get real gun action sounds, and so I bought one.
Sweet.
And I actually got permission to... No, actually, I'll not talk about that part. I went into a quiet room and basically recorded all the different, you know, action sounds. Not the gunshots. I didn't record the gunshots in a room. but, like, the sound of the slide being worked back and forth and the reloading sounds and whatnot. And they were 10 times better than what we had previously.
So that's authentic.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And, of course, it's America, so it's fine to have a gun.
Yeah. Okay. Or many.
Yeah.
more the better.
And the next question comes from Tricky Vane, and he's from the IDOS forums, and also he's a musician, and he'd like to share that with us all. So here comes his question.
When you go about crafting the audio for a game like this one, do you find yourselves relying more on digital effects and synthesizing your audio rather than recording and sampling live sounds? And if so, do you try and shy away from it?
Zolot guitar.
Well, that's a shame. I think, yeah, the Zolot machine may have hampered like his guitar playing, which was very good.
I liked it.
So I guess it's a combination of both, right?
Not really. There's very little that's synthesized. I think, like, pretty much everything is recorded from actual source. Like, that's something we tried to do from the beginning, really, is to record as much as we possibly could, mm-hmm. especially if it was something that was within our grasp. Stuff like explosions and stuff are difficult. But, yeah, everything else, like, either footsteps, we recorded. I remember for, like, the body falls when Lara's body lands. Mm-hmm. Those are mostly from Mike Peasley throwing himself around.
Okay.
Like around Crystal.
How about the, like, pickup sounds? So when you pick up some ammo or medipack or something, do you build those on a synth or something? Or are they from a library? Or?
No, those are different parts of gun sounds and stuff that are kind of mixed together.
Oh, wow.
For, like, the ammo pickups and stuff. Health sounds, I think, are...
Or, like, you know, when you in Guardian Light, when you walk over, you've got full health or ammo and it makes the sound... Which is a cool sound.
A lot of times, to create a unique sound like that, the sound synthesized, you usually use a lot of filters and effects, and the result is that you end up with waves that, which resemble, a synthesized sound.
Right.
Because you've processed it so much, and so typically with most, I think. Certainly with anything that I would have done, it would all have been actual sounds. There's so much in a real sound that's part of the timbre that sounds unique. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you take a recording of whatever it is and then filter it and everything else, and then it still has a unique feel that is more or less... Well, it's very difficult to create if you're doing it purely through programming, like a saw wave or something.
Yeah, I think we would only really use synthesized sounds for music. That's probably the only place that you would want synthetic sounds.
Good answer. Sam's dad from TombRaiderForums.com asks, Guardian of Light seems much more fast-paced than the traditional Tomb Raiders. In the traditional TR, sound was very important in establishing the sense of isolation and suspense, i.e. the metallic clanging in the system level of TR1. Was the faster pace a challenge in creating the same feel of suspense? A suspenseful pause.
Suspense. I mean, it's somewhat of a different game. Suspense. There, you don't really have a lot of opportunity to feel suspense, but when it happens, it's usually quite deliberate, and so we usually try to use a sound like that kind of metal clanging something to imply something else. So like a stinger, and they'll usually have something to do with a specific event. It's not, we didn't really do anything that was kind of part of the world because the action's so fast. It wouldn't read as though it was, you know, a sound that's kind of creating suspense. So we would do it for specific events, like when it was necessary, but not anything that was sort of part of the core gameplay.
Okay. The next question is from Helion555, who says, I'd imagine that since this game is smaller in comparison to mainstream Tomb Raider games, but does that mean your job in the game's audio department is easier? Or does the new aspect on a Tomb Raider game create a harder task? In other words, does LCJOL make it easier for you guys, or is it a challenge for you?
Well, like, what was difficult is that, like, for me, it was keeping the energy going throughout the entire game. Like, in previous ones, it's more varied. Like, you'd have areas where it's kind of quiet and subdued and stuff, but in the Guardian of Light, it was, for the most part, just really intense for the entire game.
Mm.
And keeping that going without being
monotonous,
annoying,
or, yeah,
was difficult.
I think one of the things that's a little misleading about this game is that it is being sold as an arcade game, and yet if you look at the detail that has gone into it, it's incredibly complex. And you know, there's certain objects in the world that, you know, will just bounce around and react with everything. There's, you know, exploding jeeps and, you know, exploding pillars and a lot of physics objects. And so that's a lot of work to implement. And it's kind of an anomaly. I don't know any other game that has yet. I mean, I guess that's where we're headed. But I don't know another game that has this level of detail. So it from what I can see, I wouldn't imagine it'd be any less work. I'd imagine. I mean, I haven't worked on a previous Tomb Raider game, but I imagine it's probably more work in less time.
Mm-hmm. And so you've mentioned a couple of times that it's your first time on a Lara or Tomb Raider game. What's it like? For all the people at home, because they're probably wondering what it's like to work on Lara. So we spoke to Cam, I did a Q&A with Cam, the artist, and kind of what's it like to work on Lara. What's it like to do the soundtrack? Like, do you feel pressure to create?
I don't feel a lot of pressure. I think that has a lot to do with the my coworkers. I think Carl is... when I started working here, I had to figure out a lot of the systems and tools, and Carl was very, very easy to work with. Also, our producer, the lovely Forrest,
mm-hmm.
Was very, very easy to work with. She made things very, very easy for me. I think going to E3 really hit it home for me, just what this meant. And I think that I'm kind of glad I did the majority of my work before that. Because, you know, when I just pretty much had my head down up until that point, and then you sort of realize what it's going to be, and then you're kind of like, oh, wow.
E3 was mental, as I discussed that with Forrest last week. But without further ado, it's time for a question from War Dragon, and she's recorded it as well. So far away.
Combat music and enemy sound effects can really make the combat a lot more exciting, but on the other hand, if there's an enemy ambush, it might give it away if we can hear the enemies in advance or if we hear the combat music playing. So how do you find the perfect balance between when to play these sound effects for excitement and when to keep everything quiet in order to surprise us?
Yeah, how do you do that?
Very carefully. Like, the enemies will usually be either triggered off camera, and you might hear like the enemies when they spawn, like they'll make a noise. With the music, we'll frequently trigger it when they spawn, especially if it's on camera. If they spawn off camera, it's kind of tricky. It's ideal if we can wait until they're within range of the player.
I think a lot of these kind of decisions are built into the design. So in some sense you react to how the designer has built the level. You know, there'll be times when you're supposed to be surprised by an enemy, and so then you react that way. But in a lot of ways, I think that's why it's really important to be talking to designers before they actually start implementing things. Because if you can talk to a designer and tell them, there'll be some designers who really appreciate sound, and some who just don't know enough about it and the power of it. And so, you know, just kind of educating them a little bit as to how they can use sound can benefit and help in those situations and help inform the way they design the level.
Okay. The next question is from Just Croft from TombRaiderForums.com, who asks, what are the most frequent problems when recording environment sounds?
Airplanes. Far and away airplanes. Because you'll be recording something, like I was recording footsteps, so I was like sloshing around in mud, just running around and jumping around and stuff, and then there's this airplane, you know, and I was like, I have to stop and wait for the airplane to go by. And then start again.
The most frequent problem of recording an environment sound is trying to find the environment. Because like Carl said, it's like everywhere there's airplanes and everywhere there's traffic. And the way traffic sounds here is in California sounds very, very different to how it does in the UK or wherever. You know, the sirens and things that go off.
Motorcycles.
Yeah, and typically you don't even want that in your recording anyway. But if your goal is to record traffic or sirens or traffic with sirens, then you have to make sure that you record it in the correct location. So wherever that's really the hardest thing is just finding the right location.
And so moving on to some questions about Keely and Lara, Tomb Dude has recorded a question, and here it is.
Hey, first question. When you're writing script for Warcraft and Guardian of Light and then recording it, did you want the script to be more serious similar to the Underworld script? Or for this game, were you completely intending for it to be a light-hearted game?
And Daniel Sun from the Artist Forums and Ants27 and Love to Raid from Tomb Raider Forums all ask a similar question.
I think the main... main thing was just really to have a story that was seemed like was a chapter of Lara's life. That was something that, you know, was an element that was an adventure that she had gone on at some point. The timing wasn't really too important, and but I think definitely it was to keep it fairly light.
So as like Daniel Sun asks, Keely's voice is slightly more energetic in some of the trailers. I mean, maybe partly to do with some of the cutscenes they've seen. But was that like part of the direction that was given, or was it just kind of her reacting to the script? Or
I think with the cinematics that people have seen so far, those are definitely some of the more energetic mm-hmm. cinematics. But that was really, I think, the direction we wanted to take it, is something that's not as serious, and something that you could just get into right away. So you didn't really need to have any prior knowledge of the story, and that you could just kind of, it basically was self-contained and explained itself. And that was really interesting, actually, for me. I haven't worked with Keely before, but it was funny hearing her voice for the first time, because I was something like, oh, that's Lara. That's Lara Croft.
What was Keely like to work with? Like, as a person, was she...
Keely, well... Charming. Yeah, so Keely was... she was great. The only direction that I gave her was, at the very, very beginning, was just that this is a typical Lara Croft adventure. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to distract her with anything, because I'd never worked with her before, but I knew that she knew the character, and I knew that she knew it better than I did. So I didn't want to distract her with anything, and I just wanted her to be Lara Croft.
And Chris99 from Eidos Forums has a question, and here it is.
Right, hi. Thanks again for the podcast. And here's my question. What's Kitty's attitude towards Lara Croft? Is she interested in her personality to make the voice acting more effective? Thank you very much for the answers.
I mean, Keely is very professional, and she's not really. I don't think she's very protective of the character, not in a negative way. But if we were pushing her, sometimes we would push her to be a little more over the top than she had been in the past, and she was very comfortable in doing that. And a lot of the times when we did that, I think we didn't really know what to expect when we said, we would do one take of a line and we would say, okay, that's great, but this time you can go like just go crazy and just go like way over the top. And usually we would build up to that, mm-hmm. And when she did it in a way that was, I wasn't exactly sure what to expect, but she did it in a way that was very respectful to the character. So it wasn't as though it was like suddenly became hysterical. It was done in a way that was very, that was still Lara and very real.
Okay, and Poke Warrior from TombRaiderForums.com wants to know how many lines Keely's recorded for Lara Croft and how many have been used in the game. Do you know that off the top of your head? Could you have a guess?
5,000?
Between
5,000 and 5,000. it's definitely not as much as the previous games.
Tony Robinson from TombRaiderForums.com has recorded a question in the fashion of Zolot.
Zolotl.
In times of high Lara Croft, she sighed. Was there any other actresses ever considered to be the voice of Lara Croft besides Keely?
And for those of you who haven't been to Northern Ireland, that question reads, in terms of how Lara Croft should sound, was there any other actresses ever considered to be the voice of Lara besides Keely? Thanks for the question, Tony.
I mean, Keely is just is Lara. And I think, particularly for what we were going for... an episode of her life, and you just have to have her. I think that someone somewhere may have thought, I wonder what someone else would sound like, but I don't think anyone really pursued that.
I remember hearing Forrest doing the placeholder voice acting for Lara, and there were actually people in Wimbledon in head office who were like, why have they made her American? Because Forrest was so good at it.
Before that it was Alex.
Before that it was me.
So we're going to see if we can dig some of that up.
And I played Totec and Solo.
We should release that as like a downloadable so you can get all the...
I think... only Carl and I would find that amusing.
Nightwish from Tomb Raider Forums has recorded the next question.
Has Keely refused to do something or say something for the role?
That's a good question.
I do know what you're saying about her voice.
We can't embarrass her. I embarrassed her for the last podcast by calling her cute. Anyway.
Well, it's good that I don't know if she's interested in voice acting, which is even a card agent. No, I don't think so. We didn't ask her to say anything that was
untoward.
Mm. Yes, or controversial. I think that a lot of it was typical Tomb Raider stuff. And I don't think she's the type of person that would refuse to say anything either. like I said before, she's I think she's committed to Lara, but I think she trusts us to not to do something that would ruin the character. And I think that she understands too that the process is that typically you never really understand or know exactly what a line is going to sound like until you actually hear it
in context
and from the particular actors. So you know, when Carl or I do the voice of Lara, we get one idea of what it might sound like, but until you actually have Lara saying the line, then I think that suddenly informs what you should be doing.
Okay. Matty Croft from Tomb Raider Forums asks, how many times do you try before registering or maybe recording the sounds that Lara does, for example, when she climbs? So how many attempts, I guess?
I think for the when she climbs, we went through quite a few different... At least we had quite a few different sets of grunts.
Mm-hmm.
And we had like 5 or 6 different sets of like maybe 10 different grunts each per set. And we just tried a bunch of different ones until one sounded like she was climbing.
Okay. Dizzy Doyle from Tomb Raider Forums asks, does Keely do that immense scream? Because that's so freaking awesome. If so, I bet she felt silly. Kudos to her anyway. It's my favorite Lara death scream.
Oh, cool.
So,
the immense scream when Lara like falls off of stuff?
Yeah.
I think you mean this one. And Apathetic from TeamRaiderForums.com asks, whose idea was it to make Lara say time to run? And then he's put a bit of a confused emoticon next to it. So I guess, would that be Daniel Neuberger, the creative director with whom I shall be recording a podcast next week, potentially?
Yeah. That's Daniel's fault, or I guess
stroke
idea.
Of excellence and genius.
If you don't like it, it's his fault. And you can
ask a question about that next week.
Yeah, exactly.
Ants 27 asks, when Keely's recording, does she add her own one-liners or add in anyway to the dialogue she's presented with in the script? And Egypt Gypsy also asked a similar question.
She doesn't really ad lib. She just pretty much gives you the line as you want it.
So moving on to Totec, Michael DT from Tomb Raider Forums asked, does Totec get any dialogue, and if so, how much does he speak? Dambis from the Idos Forums also asked.
Yeah, Totec has a lot of dialogue. He speaks probably as much as Lara, maybe a little less.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he has dialogue.
Cool. Matt TR. Hello, Matt TR. He's recorded a question, and this is how it goes.
Hey, this is Matt TR from TRF. My question is, was Totec, the ancient Mayan warrior, always your number one choice for the second player in the game? Or did you have another idea, maybe another character or other concepts?
Sounding good, Matt. I guess that's more of a question for Daniel Neuberger again, because it's kind of a creative direction kind of question. So that's something that we'll be answering in the next podcast. Tipping Water from TombRaiderForums.com wants to know who provides the voice for Totec. No, it's not Keely's voice. Transformed with the amazing Zolot machine. And Daniel, Dark Seven Angel and TR Lesdu also asked that.
It's Jim Cummings.
Right, and I believe he's done quite a lot of work in his career.
Yeah, he's done a lot of stuff, and you will probably recognize his voice when you hear it. But yeah, Jim was really great, and he's an actor who ad-libs, and he also gives you a lot of variation in his delivery. So typically when you get the recordings back, you usually have a lot to pick from, so that was really nice.
Excellent.
Jim did the voice for Totec and Zolot.
Okay.
Yeah. So Jim Cummings also plays Zolot, and so we used the little bit of some voice filtering to make him sound more evil, and I think it works better on him than it does on most of the people who ask questions.
That's a matter of opinion. And
I'm not saying that these people don't have great voices. It's just Jim Cummings has a very has a very specific voice that Zolo machine was created, custom created for. So
tailored, bespoke. Custom, so, yeah. Well, Nightwish has another question.
Toltec is a warrior of thousands of years old, and it doesn't really make sense for him to be speaking in English. Did you face any difficulties when working on him, like the accent or the overall sound of him?
I guess we kind of answered that. Well, I answered that with the lovely Forrest last week in the podcast. And yeah, if you'd like to hear the answer to that, then you have to listen to last week's. But it was an artistic, creative decision that they made that... I can't remember what the language was called that Toltec would have actually been speaking, but there would have been a lot of...
It was called Nahuatl.
That's right. I forgot that, yeah. So it's...
That would have been hard to understand.
We went with English. Nico Croft from the Eidos Forum wants to know if Lara screams when she falls, which we've established she most certainly does. And what about Toltec? Does Toltec scream?
Toltec does scream.
Have you queued that up?
Yes, I do.
Yeah,
That's what he sounds like.
Another question from Noodles RW, or Noodle SRW.
Noodles RW.
Yes.
Noodles
and he's recorded it again.
Were you able to record the voice acting for Guardian of Light with the actors together, or did you have to dub separate recordings together for the final cut?
That's something that I'm thinking about. And when we recorded them, they were separate. And you can get a... If you have actors in the same space, they can react to one another. Sometimes, you know, that can be complicated because then you have essentially one other's or an actor's lines recorded over another actor's sometimes if they speak over each other. Mm. But I think you can get some really great performances that way.
Toltec and Zolotz were done at the same place.
Yeah, but even still, those guys were, even though they didn't go back and forth, it took some time to establish what Zolot's voice would sound like in comparison to Toltec, so we actually did them afterwards. If we had done them back and forth, I think that typically works pretty well in animation, that, you know, when it's like, if it's something... like a series animation where the actors are very, very familiar with the characters, but when you just have, you know, one recording session, typically you want to get the character's voice right, and then while that's in their mind, you want to get all the lines.
Dingling has recorded a question, which I believe we may have kind of touched on before, but we'll play it anyway because it's funny to listen to the Zolot machine. For me.
How much input do the voice actors have in recording their dialogue? Are they free to try and record a few different versions, or is there a specific delivery that the team either wants or needs for each line?
So that's Zolot from Glasgow, somewhere in the west of Scotland, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, he sounds good through the Zolot machine. I think, well, they have as much input as they want to give, really. We're pretty open to suggestion. I mean, typically with Keely, she was very good at picking out the phrases that were not so British. Mm-hmm. And so she could find, she could pick those out and change the script so that it was
a little bit more Lara-like.
Yeah, a little bit more Lara-like. For the most part, though, in terms of the way that the line was delivered, they would pretty much... We would give them the direction and the context and where they were. And then they would, you know, then take from that and give their interpretation of that. Unless the actors... Like, for example, Jim Cummings would give a lot of different variations. Unless the actor wanted to do that, I didn't push an actor to you know, say, okay, do one that's like now like this and now like this, because I think that can be very, very distracting. Mm. I think a lot of the times what you want to do is start with whatever the actor interprets the line as. And if that's not exactly what you're thinking, you give a little bit of direction because maybe you didn't express something clearly the first time.
Okay. James Green 91 says, also, and I don't know if this is class sound effects, kind of is, when it comes to developing the game, are the voices of the character recorded before the actual design of the locations and characters? And I think, given that you two have done the voice acting for Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light, it's safe to say that, I guess, it's kind of designed out. And
yeah, you get temporary stuff in there, and you see how it plays in the game, and you suddenly go, oh, well, that was a bad idea.
And then, I sound like a woman.
Yeah, Lara doesn't sound like me. And then you sort of refine it then, and you get it closer until you're pretty sure that it's exactly the way you want it, and then you get the actual actress to do it.
Here's Tomb Dude with another question.
Second question. When recording voiceover for Lara, Toadette, and other characters, how long can the process be? And also, can they get stressful at times? Kind of a third question. Do you have to explain to Keeley and other people how you want them to sound, for example, serious, funny, and things like that? Thank you.
Yeah, you typically give them the context of where you are. So, for example, with Chompy, I explained, okay, well, you're in this corridor and there's this gigantic fish that's about 3 stories tall right behind you and it's chasing you. And so then you say,
yeah.
And typically there's a, you know, there's an understanding there. Keely thought that was pretty hilarious, but it's unless we're not getting it the way we want it, I usually don't give too much direction.
Okay. Xmas from TombRaiderForums.com asks, are there any Lara's lines or lines from other characters from past Tomb Raider games which didn't make it into the final version of the game? So, yeah, I guess there is. If there was some scripting, even for Guardian of Light, that didn't get into the final version of the game.
There pretty much always is. I mean, you write a script, and then once you plug it into the game, once you have the real actors, sometimes it just doesn't sound right. Or there'll be a line about a certain event that ends up getting cut.
Mm-hmm.
So there's always stuff that doesn't make it in. Of course, there's also always, sometimes there's stuff that needs to get added. So you'll end up having another additional recording session mm-hmm. later on to kind of pick up with the additional stuff that might have gotten added in or missed.
NRO asks, who is the most memorable, aside from Keeley, voice actor you've had on the recent TR games? Carl?
That's it, Jim.
So Jim was cool to work with for Guardian of Light.
Yeah, no, Jim is great. Yeah, he's very, very professional, and he's got a ton of experience.
The next question is about the music, and Lil Hanan, it's probably a better way to pronounce it, from Idos Forums, says, we've noticed in the gameplay footage and trailers shown so far that you've recycled audio from previous games. Although there's nothing wrong with that, as the soundtracks have always been great, have you made any original scores tracks exclusively for LTGOL? And that's also asked by Nico Croft, Treble, Mickey, Jamie Cowdell, someone who's quite leet, H4RR7H, and Braider and the World and his dog.
Mm. No, it's all from previous games. There, it's all taken from the past 3 Tomb Raider games. And I think the reason for doing that was really to help in grounding people in reinforcing that this is a Tomb Raider experience, particularly because it was such a different direction for the series.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was one of the things that we could keep and sort of help keep the real sort of Tomb Raider spirit.
So it adds a level of continuity into the, because it's still in the Tomb Raider universe, although it's not the next Tomb Raider. There's still a kind of thread there that will evoke emotions and memories of previous games or whatever, so from the Tomb Raider world.
Yeah, and I think when I started working on the game, what I really liked is that a lot of the music I hadn't heard out of specific context. And so what was really nice was to use this music in different ways. And so I really liked just how we were using it differently.
Okay. Cole?
I kind of liked being able to go through all the tracks in the previous games that I'd worked with previously and kind of picking the ones that I liked the most. But also at the same time, it was a little hard to detached from where the music was used previously. Like when I was going through listening to all the different tracks we could choose from, and then listening to a track and trying to hear it for what it was, as opposed to, you know, what level it used to be in.
Right.
But it was nice to kind of reuse the tracks that I really enjoyed listening to in the previous games.
Because the library's pretty massive, and you've had like Trolls and Colin produce some really great stuff. So
yeah, in Legend there was 4 hours of music, and in Underworld there was about 2 hours of music. So there was a lot.
Nice. James Green has a question about sound. James Green 91 has a question about sound effects, and it is: when it comes to making sound effects for Tomb Raider and the Guardian of Light games, do you use sound effects from real source, or do you make them up with a mixture of items? As I've seen in one film, they used a rifle for someone's footsteps. So I guess, again, you've actually bought a gun for a gun sound, and you've also used spaghetti and oatmeal.
And I bought a motorcycle for the motorcycle in Underworld.
Is that the reason why you bought it?
Kinda.
Well, it's a good excuse, if it wasn't.
I got a lot of use out of it.
T.R. Lestu, how do you obtain the sounds used in the game, and which tools or programs do you use to edit them?
Use tape, mostly.
Yeah, mostly. we capture them with a two cans and a string, and then Carl describes them.
Bang!
Well, no, we have portable recorders, and we have a lot of different kinds of microphones. And we'll usually go out and record the sound. And then as far as tools go, we use we'll use SoundForge and also Nuendo.
What's Nuendo?
Nuendo is a...
Is that Steinberg?
It's for sequencing, but we could equally use Vegas, and I think that was what we used as well actually on this project, and for sequencing and also Pro Tools.
Right, and so the effects generally come from which program?
The effects are
like the chorus on Zolot's in the Zolot machine.
Zolot's, because all that stuff needed to be batch processed, and what that means is, you know, all done at once.
Mm-hmm.
It was done in SoundForge, and so the effect was sort of designed in SoundForge, and then that way you could batch process it very, very easily. But I think ultimately with any of these tools, it's really just finding what you like to work with. I mean, they've gotten to the point where they're pretty much all the same.
Aussie 500 has a question for Carl, who's worked on all the Crystal Dynamics TR games, as we've established. What did they use the raw chicken for way back in Legend? Was it an obvious sound we would have expected, like something like someone being torn or crushed, or was it something unusual we would never guess? Did they need to sacrifice any more potential roast dinners in search of that special sound for Guardian of Light? So, not for Guardian of Light, thankfully the chickens have been spared, but... What was it used for in Legend? Can you remember?
I think actually some of the sounds are still used for the spiders. And also, thankfully, it wasn't that much of a sacrifice because it wasn't cooked yet, so it wasn't fully roasted.
Wait, but, it was live?
Huh?
Oh.
No, it was quite dead, but it wasn't cooked. But I think...
So spiders is one.
Yeah, like when you squish the spiders, when you shoot the spiders, they have little kind of squishy sounds when you shoot them. And it's hard to tell where they exactly went because they end up getting mixed in.
Right.
So most sounds end up being a composite of different sources to get exactly what you want. But I think they probably would have been mixed in with just the general squishy sounds. And the spiders are probably the best example of squishy bits. And yeah, there are bone-breaking sounds as well. And I think maybe when Lara falls, she might play a couple of them when her ragdoll hits the ground.
Mm-hmm. The chicken was well used. You made the most out of it.
It was... part of a number of different sources that were used and abused, yeah.
Aussie 500 also asks, did they get to play with a real flamethrower while recording the sounds for Guardian of Light? Did you buy one, Carl, I guess? Have you got a flamethrower in your office with your unicycle and your whatever else did you do?
I'm afraid we did not buy a flamethrower.
That'd be cool, though. Do you think we can do that for next time?
Get it on expenses.
I'm
Actually, wait. Look at your face like you're really considering.
I'm trying to remember where the source came from, and we did come pretty close. My father has an oxyacetylene blowtorch. You know, with the two big tanks, one oxygen, one full of acetylene.
Yeah.
And so for some of the gas, it sounds like the psh sounds is just the torch blowing oxygen. And then we also would light it, and it provided a really nice kind of
brilliant.
Typical flamethrower sound. And
why does your father have that? To kill big spiders
handy,
with?
Basically.
Oh, okay. Wherever possible you record as close to, or the actual thing.
Yeah, if it's feasible, then we want it. Because going through the libraries, it's like as I said, when the pistol sounds in Legend, I thought were great. Like, I want to put those together. I was like, these are awesome. They sound really cool. They have all the little details and stuff. And then I recorded my own, and it was like 10 times better than what I had previously. And because you get exactly what you want. And if you don't get it quite right, you can record it again. And
yeah, you can get a lot closer with any sound that you record yourself than anything you'd find from a library. It's usually a compromise when you find a sound from a library. Like, well, that's close enough. But I think when you really want to, particularly for these games, when you really want to find the right sound, you need to go and record it yourself.
Just Croft from TombRaiderForums.com asks, have there been any audio requests that you haven't been able to achieve, and what were they?
It's interesting, like, where video games are at this point, because I go to a lot of video game conferences, and I see a lot of people talk about audio tools, and they say, you know, we're at the point where you can pretty much do whatever you want in video games, and that's not true at all. And so a lot of our time is taken up by figuring out how we're actually going to achieve a particular a thing, you know, a particular sound or reaction or something like that. So that's kind of where the complexity comes in, is figuring out how you're actually going to achieve the sound that you want. And so one of the things that we did on this project, which was very, very interesting for anyone who's super into this stuff, was that we did a spotting session, which is something that's typical for audio post-production in film and something that doesn't really happen so much in video games. And so what we were doing was sort of treating it as though this was right after we hit beta. We the game was essentially done. There was no more levels or objects that could be added to the game at that point. It's kind of the first time that you have where you can play the game from start to finish, and it's not going to change. And you know, that's pretty much the idea. But so what we did was we sat down with the producer and Daniel, the lovely Forrest, and Daniel Neuberger, and the lovely Daniel. And we played through and just sort of asked them what they wanted to get out of the game, you know, in terms of the emotional arc and just also what they weren't, what they felt was missing from the game. And so that was really interesting, because then we had a process for a while after that of just implementing those, and it was a really, really long list, and I think something that we we wouldn't have identified otherwise, I think. So it was really useful. That was really useful.
Sweet. Nightwish asks the following question.
What is the strangest thing you've had to record for the franchise?
I was just thinking that we recorded a lot of kind of odd things, but the weirdest and most awesome recording that I recall, so we had a lot of wood barrels, and so we bought a big wine cask, you know, like the big, typical, huge wooden barrels, and brought it back to the offices, and then basically rolled it around and recorded it, and then bounced it around. And
where were you rolling it around? Was that
the parking lot?
Right.
And just generally having a good time messing around with the big huge barrel. And then we got to the point where we wanted to smash it to bits, so we had a sledgehammer, which is one of our pieces of equipment, and I was getting ready to smash the top in, and the sledgehammer had kind of like an odd texture on the head of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of haphazardly slid the hammer across the top of the barrel, and it made a low groaning, kind of
awesome,
really weird groan, which is, so we ended up recording a lot of that, just basically going back and forth playing with the sledgehammer on the top of the wine barrel, and that's where we got a lot of the big, huge groan things, and that was totally unexpected.
That's so cool.
And then we smashed it to bits.
Because you could.
Yeah. Well, then we needed wood smash sounds.
And Nightwish concludes this podcast with the final question.
What does Jumpy sound like? Could you imitate it for purely educational purposes, of course?
So
imitate?
Yeah, that's over to Alex and Carl.
Kind of.
wait, no, it was more screechy, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, you do the screechy part. I'll do
that's genuinely quite scary.
So, that was close. Chompy is a combination of things. Because he's a fish, I thought it was important to get some of the... an animal that lived in the sea, at least. So... part of him is walrus, and this is the walrus part. And that's actually pitched down as well. So that's a walrus with a pitch down. Then for the squeak, I used a pig. So the pig sounds like this. And I think that there... I may have put some reverb that was... pretty short reverb, so that it sounded like it was coming from within his mouth, and he's got this this pretty huge mouth. The next thing is, I think, an earthquake, and that was just to give it some low end. So I'm not sure if you can hear that. You probably need some a subwoofer to hear that. And then the final thing was the sound of a lion hissing. So it's kind of like when your cat, you pull your cat's tail and your cat's like, meow. It's like that sound, but a lion doing it.
Do you own a cat?
Yeah. Can you tell?
You pull your cat's tail.
Not all the time. and so then this is the lion hiss. And this is also, I think, pitched down. So if you... with all those elements combined, you have Chompy.
You have a Chompy.
So, you should probably play that first and then go through all those things.
brilliant. So, Alex, Carl, thank you very much.
I have also something I wanted to say.
Oh, I see. This really? Isn't planned.
No, this is completely unplanned.
I get married.
Carl. Everyone, I'm kneeling. I have something that I observed when I joined this company, which I was very sort of surprised about, was, or not actually surprised about, but I guess I just didn't think about until I joined. And one of the things is that, Kira is, I guess your job is to communicate with the fans and
the community, general public,
the general public. And one of the things that I didn't think about was just how people within the company react to what the general public are thinking.
Oh, the community.
The community, particularly the forum. And what I wanted to point out was that a lot of the stuff that is posted on the forum ends up circulating around the company, particularly if it's like something funny, like someone has posted a cartoon or something that usually makes the rounds in the studio. And, for whatever reason, we can't really react to any of that stuff. But a lot of what people say on the forums is, people in this company take in and respond to. And so... Yeah, that was the kind of thing that I wanted to point out.
That's very nice. Yeah, but I can remember that since I've been at Crystal for the last 3 months, I've seen, people in the working on Guardian of Light and the design department circulating stuff that they found on the forums, I know when the Underpuss was famous around Tomb Raider Underworld, a few of the guys printed up T-shirts and wore them into a team meeting. I guess everyone on the forums, I mean, I always say, you know, everyone's reading the forums, but they genuinely do. And thanks very much for telling everyone, Alex. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's really important. I think whatever you post up there, you're being listened to, and so when you want things and you think, you know, I think sometimes it can seem like no one's really listening to that because no one reacts to it, but everybody in this company is reading that stuff.
And you can always send me a private message if there's something in particular you want to say, and I'll pass it on to the relevant person.
Yeah, and then the only other thing was that can you tell the story about the do you know the story when we went to E3? There was a person who will rename nameless from a Japanese company who was hitting on Keir.
I'm not going to tell that story at all.
Oh, come on!
That wasn't actually at E3. That was another time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's a great story, but I'm not going to tell it. And on that note, thanks very much for listening, everyone, and thanks to you, Alex and Carl. It's been brilliant. And the next podcast will hopefully be with Daniel, the creative director, next week. So thanks for listening. Say goodbye.
Oh, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Sorry. Bye.